That reading from the Book of Wisdom suggests that God somehow is always out in front of us, beckoning us, drawing us into something more than we have been. And he does that with all of his creation, that his spirit dwells in everything, and the glory of God shows forth in his creation because his spirit is in everything, and because he wouldn't have created it if he didn't love it. So this love extends itself, particularly in the human race, in terms of mercy. And so standing out in front of us, God forgives us before we even know we need it. Before we even know the extent of our sin, God is already forgiving us so that we might be converted. That's what the text says. The presumption is that we get converted by God's prior grace. We get forgiven by God's prior grace. It's always ahead of us. God isn't behind us, pushing us. He's ahead of us in the glorious kingdom, in the kingdom realized of the future, reaching back into our present and beckoning us, drawing us into that full reality of the very glory of God, of sharing in the life of God. Now, we have to hear that over and over again. That's what we do here every Sunday, is we keep hearing that message of hope, because there aren't many signs of it in our world and in our lives. It's easy for us to get down on ourselves because we're kind of mired in sin. We can't get rid of our bad habits. We feel a little hopeless about ourselves, and we often feel hopeless about our world, that politically and economically and in terms of justice and in terms of poverty, and you know, there's just so many signs everywhere that the kingdom is not yet here. So we can, like the rest of the world, lose hope. We can get discouraged. We can get depressed. We can lose our faith that God is somehow imperceptibly active in our world and in our lives, even though we don't see it with our eyes and hear it with our ears. And so that gospel story about Zacchaeus fits into that context, I think, from that reading from Wisdom. Last, the chapter before this one in Luke's gospel tells about the rich young man. And he says to Jesus, "What must I do to be saved?" And Jesus says, "Well, what are the commandments?" And so he lists off the commandments: love the Lord God with your whole heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, "Yeah, that's right. What more must I do?" And Jesus says, "Well, if you want to do more, why don't you sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and come and follow me?" And the man goes away sad because his possessions are many. So here you have a righteous young man, someone who's in the inner circle. He's educated. He knows the commandment. He knows the law. He interprets it correctly. He has everything going for him, except he is somehow unwilling to be converted to Christ. There isn't room in his life for some reason, and it probably is about possessions, that he has filled his life with something else, and there's no room for Christ in there. Now, Luke contrasts this story with that, what comes right after it. So Zacchaeus is not a righteous man. Zacchaeus is an outsider. He's Jewish, but he hasn't been to synagogue for ages, and he's colluding with the Roman government to collect taxes that make everybody angry. He's hated by the whole community. He is an outcast, an outsider. And when Jesus announces to him that I'm coming to your house for dinner, they all start grumbling because they've already made their judgments years ago about this guy. So if this guy is the Son of God, how can he love this man? And of course, in Luke's gospel, Jesus is always aiming certain events like this at those who are so secure in their salvation, who are self-righteous. And it's all these self-righteous people who are judging Zacchaeus. And so the story ends, of course, Jesus came to seek out and to save what was lost. It's a conversion story. And Zacchaeus is able to be converted completely to Christ because he knows how much he needs it. He knows that he is empty. He knows that his cup is absolutely empty, and so it can be filled with Christ. And so his conversion is complete. Not only does he welcome Jesus into his home, he shares table fellowship with Jesus. We share table fellowship with Jesus here at the altar. He makes recompense for the injustices of his past. He gives back fourfold if he's embezzled anyone. And he's going to give half of his possessions to the poor. So sharing table fellowship with Jesus, being generous to the poor, making up for past injustices, that's what conversion looks like. So this standing before us, this beckoning us into a deeper and richer and more divine kind of life, is not just a great gift that God gives us, but it comes with the expectation of some kind of a response, namely conversion. That we would become converted to Christ, that we would take on Christ's attitude, we would take on Christ's fellowship, we would take on Christ's concern for the injustices of the world, his concern for the poor, his concern for the outsider and the prejudged, and to extend that same mercy to one another that has been extended to us. I think the first step in conversion is to recognize how much we need it, to recognize that we have been forgiven by the cross, and to just meditate on that our whole life long and never lose our awe and wonder at the mercy of God for us. And then secondly, to be so converted that we can't help ourselves being generous and kind and merciful and compassionate to everyone around us.